Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Organized Chaos. Organized Chaos is ESPN's newest podcast hosted by former NFL coach Rex Ryan and his former Jets and Ravens linebacker Bart Scott. The duo has been reunited in this weekly podcast with new episodes every Monday that will provide listeners with expert insight and analysis on everything happening around the league, featuring trending stories from on and off the field. That's Organized Chaos. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cyndi Lauper, and more. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about some stuff from the NFL this weekend. Also, we are going to take your voicemails about the game cheating. But first, all right, so we've seen Kyrie Irving's movies. You know what I'm saying? Like we know what time it is with him. But something with me and Kyrie always is, I be trying to wait till he tells me what he's talking about before I assume I know what he's talking about. Like, Gabe, I don't know if you saw it the other day. He said something about, I'm taking my mask off. You should take off yours. And everybody was like, this is so irresponsible of Kyrie telling people to do this in the midst of the pandemic. I'm like, why do you think you know what Kyrie's talking about? Because my thought definitely with Kyrie was, Kyrie was probably talking about some old touchy-feely, I have been wearing this mask to conceal who I actually am, and now I'm going to be the person that I really am. Now, granted, you can make a counterpoint about that to say that why would anybody pretend to be the person that he has been in public for like the last 4 years, give or take? You get what I'm saying? But even still, it's like, yo, you always just got to slow down with Kyrie. Like, I could assume I think I know what Kyrie thinks about a bunch of stuff, but you can never really know, and he don't really like to talk to us. Okay. However, we got this story here in Rolling Stone about Kyrie, and its position is being about the NBA and the anti-vaxxers that are within the NBA, and the idea, and it's written by this gentleman named Matt Sullivan, right? And he wrote the book about the Nets that just came out not too long ago. He's the one that went on Dan's podcast and started talking about what it was like to smoke weed with Kevin Durant, which, gotta say, sucker move. That was whack. Shouldn't have did that. Anyway, that's the guy here who wrote this story. Now, I have a problem with the story itself. It's in Rolling Stone again. Go check it out. I'll tell you more about what's in it as we talk, but what it felt like to me reading it as someone who has been a writer at various points and knowing kind of how the process goes, what this read like to me was somebody who went out to get a story about Kyrie Irving, anti-vaxxer, or to get a story about all these NBA anti-vaxxers. One of those two things, but didn't come back with enough to actually make the story. And so what it feels like as I'm reading it is combining like a couple of ideas, but the connection between them is just a little bit tenuous for me. And so what my man says in this story is that basically the NBA has a problem because they have this contingent of anti-vaxxers that exist and that they're in the group chats and that they are spreading conspiracy theories and all of this. But the NBA will not mandate that they get vaccinations because the union won't let them because the anti-vaxxers have taken control of them. That premise, I believe to be not true. Gabe, I don't know. Did you see anything in that story? And I know you just checked it out pretty quick before we got started. I didn't see any quotes in there from anybody from the Players Association. Yeah, I don't recall there being a statement about like how the Players Association feels about that. Now, I bring that up because on Friday, I saw Michelle Roberts, the head of the National Basketball Players Association, because we were shooting an episode of Costas, and she and Damar Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association, were our panel. And so even if you watch the episode, I'm pretty sure it's the vibe, the edit, like the point that I made there, no union with the power that the players have in basketball was going to allow you to mandate a vaccine. No union in a industry where the labor is trading off their bodies, like very explicitly, is going to allow a mandatory vaccine. Like, you can't do that. Like, if you're the union, this is not about how you feel about COVID or anything else. That is something that you absolutely have to fight, right? The bosses want to make you dot, dot, dot. We fight. It don't even matter if we're talking about something that ain't health related, right? After that, the union has to fight that. You can't make us do anything. We might agree, but you can't make us do anything. That to me is not an indication that the anti-vaxxers of the NBA are in charge here, that they're the ones that are really steering the ship. Don't see it that way at all. The other reason that I don't see it that way, and I think that this is very important to note, 90% of the NBA is vaccinated. Like, this story that just popped up over the weekend about Andrew Wiggins trying to get a religious exemption and being denied. Basically, Wiggins won't be able to play home games because San Francisco is not going to let you in the building if you don't demonstrate proof of vaccination. Now, my understanding of the way that this is going to work is those guys can't play home games, but they will be able to play road games under those circumstances. And I think, so like in New York, if I'm not mistaken, they can tell Kyrie that he can't come in under those circumstances. It doesn't apply to the visiting team. That's my understanding of how this is going to work right now. If I'm wrong, please let me know. You can check this out. Kyrie won't be able to play at home. He might be able to play in San Francisco. Andrew Wiggins might be able to play in New York. You know what I mean? Like, it gets down on those lines. But anyway, 90% of the league is vaccinated. Like, we cannot overstate. If the anti-vaxxers had actually taken over the NBA, we'd be talking about something different. If the anti-vaxxers had actually taken over the NBA, then this Andrew Wiggins story wouldn't be a story. It's just not what it would be, right? We have half empty media days and all kinds of stuff. That's not happening. That's why I say it feels like my man went out there to get a story, but then didn't actually get the story that he went out there to get. So it could be that one, or it could be he went to get the Kyrie story, but predictably he could not get Kyrie on the record, but he couldn't get Kevin Durant on the record. He couldn't get James Harden on the record. I don't recall there being anybody from the Nets that he got on the record. He did get Kyrie's aunt on the record, who I guess that we take as basically a proxy for Kyrie in this story. And she, you know, she got business with him. It's not like she's some distant aunt, like just went and found somebody on the phone. Like, this is somebody that he's obviously in touch with. And so the story talks to her about some things. And then there are these quotes from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who seems to serve the purpose of somebody has to say that these guys need to get vaccinated. And okay, 74-year-old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, yes, he's going to be the guy who says that. But to me, it would have carried a little more weight if you had gotten a current player who was willing to say that. And I found it surprising that there's not a single guy in the NBA that you would find that would be willing to come out and be like, hey, I think everybody needs to be vaccinated because this is important because dot, dot, dot. I struggle to believe that it'd be that difficult to find somebody. Hell, man, I bet you can get JJ Redick to say it. I bet. He just retired. You know what I'm saying? I bet you could have got him to give you that quote. But you go to Kareem and Kareem says all the obvious things. And then there's an interview with Jonathan Isaac, who is, as someone I went to graduate school with used to put it, wicked into Jesus. He has a healthy dose of Jesus in his life, and he is kind of a, he's young. He says and expresses things that I find to be preposterous. Maybe you do not, but I find them to be preposterous. But he was basically in there to give the crazy people perspective. Like, that's clearly how it's positioned in the piece. Even if you don't think he's crazy, you read it. He's positioned to give the crazy people perspective because you couldn't get crazy Kyrie in there. So who's the other dude that we know is crazy, but will take my call? Oh, Jonathan Isaac. Boom, there we go. So he's in there and he says that stuff. And you come away with this like, yeah, it's some dudes that think some out there stuff about what's going on with this pandemic. But that's not the majority of the NBA. Or maybe the majority of the NBA believes it, but they still went out here and they got these shots, right? But this isn't to be positioned. I think it's very important to note. I think it's unfair to position that story as anything about the NBA in general having a like an anti-vaxxer revolution. Because if it's a revolution, it ain't winning because all these guys got shots. But let's talk about your man's Kyrie there for a second. So apparently Kyrie sitting up on Instagram and liking a lot of tweets from an account that, like, I believe the Moderna got the microchip in it. The word Satan comes up. Like, all of this is kind of tied to Satan in some sort of way. It's out there, man. I want you to read this, and I don't want this to take away from you. Like, I want you to be able to go see it yourself and be like, oh my goodness. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just don't want to ruin it for people. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what you want to do. But at the same time, I do realize, and I feel like in the course of this, that you probably need to hear. Kyrie Irving recently started following and liking Instagram posts from a conspiracy theorist who claims that secret societies are implanting vaccines in a plot to connect Black people to a master computer for a plan of Satan. I'm going to read this one more time because they put it in the story twice somehow, at least on this link I'm reading. Irving, and this is an important detail, who serves as a vice president on the executive committee of the Players Union, recently started following and liking Instagram posts from a conspiracy theorist who claims secret societies are implanted vaccines and a plot to connect Black people to a master computer for a plan of Satan. This Moderna microchip misinformation campaign has spread across multiple NBA locker rooms and group chats, according to several dozen current players, Hall of Famers, league executives, arena workers, and virologists interviewed for this story over the past week. Now, Gabe, I want to be fair to the basketball players here on this. Just because it's getting to the group chats, what's happening once it gets there? Right? Like, is it getting in there? And then it's like six or seven dudes that's like, oh, snap, I need to look in that. Or is it happening like in the limited number of group chats that I'm a member of when somebody drops a turd in the punch bowl and everybody just acting like they don't see it? Go on now. I feel like every group chat has that. Somebody drops something in and then on the side, people ask each other, so are we going to respond to this or what? Question mark. Go. You know, like, that's not telling us anything about the league. But it does seem to be telling us things about Kyrie. And Kyrie's Annie, she in the story. If she is the proxy for Kyrie, then Kyrie's on some other shit right now. If she is the proxy for him, and she is making the point that the vaccine don't work, she's making the point that the masks don't work, like all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. Here's what got me, though, when I was reading this story. And this is the part where I look at Kyrie and I'm like, okay, you're dangerous. Like, you're actually being dangerous. So if you saw the Costa show, I did a thing about Cole Beasley. And look, Cole Beasley can get on the internet and talk all the stuff that he wants to. That's fine. And it was actually interesting because I did this commentary on him. Somebody had asked me, they're like, why are you giving the guy a platform? And I'm like, in this case, I'm not giving him a platform. My criticism of him in this case is that he saw people on Twitter who said they could not get into Bills games because they were not vaccinated, because their stadiums require you be vaccinated. And so Beasley and another player were offering to buy them tickets to go watch games in other places. And I'm like, the only thing you know about these people is that they're not vaccinated. That's it. You are making those other places less safe when you do that. Like, that's what my issue is. This isn't an ideological qual. This is a functional thing, right? And so one thing they mentioned in the story about Kyrie, and this is why I say I feel like they were trying to do a Kyrie story or maybe another one and it just couldn't all come together in the way that they wanted it to. Because this is what got me. So apparently Kyrie went to, I think, Standing Rock in South Dakota, Native American reservation. He went there not too long ago because, you know, his mother is Native American. And this is important to him, right? Like, for all the things that we get on Kyrie about, I do believe that his heart is absolutely in the right place. And this is something that has always been an important thing to him, is Native people. And he went there to the reservation and he's playing ball, you know, out there with the kids and all of this stuff. But he's out there with no mask on the reservation. Did you bring a blanket too? Like, look, this is what got me. And they mentioned this in the story. And they say that if you want to play ball, like if you want to play sports on the reservation and you are 12 or older, you have to be vaccinated. Okay? So these kids that he's seeing there, right, that are so excited to see him, they are vaccinated. Kyrie Irving is not. Those people are protecting Kyrie Irving from themselves in a way that Kyrie Irving is not protecting them from himself. He shows up there and makes the place less safe by his very presence if he's not going to be walking around wearing a mask. That's where my beef with him came up. Because look, as much as like I find the idea of the anti-vaxxers to be ridiculous, I don't find that any of their arguments that they typically give us makes sense, right? I'm not talking about people who are physically unable to take a vaccine. I'm talking about people who reject the very concept, right? I think they are generally ridiculous. But as it relates to COVID, while I think that they are ridiculous, I do think if you do not get the vaccine, but you decide to live a disciplined and conscientious life, right? You decide to stay inside as much as you can. You decide when you go out that you are going to wear a mask. You decide that you are going to wash your hands thoroughly. You will not go do indoor dining. If you do it, you're going to do it outside. You limit the number of people to whom you are exposed. All of that stuff, right? I really don't have a problem with you if you get down like that. Because when we didn't have a vaccine, that's how the rest of us lived. And a lot of us stayed safe by doing that, right? So if you want to do that, you don't want to get the vaccine, but you want to live that disciplined, conscientious life, I don't really have that big of a problem with you. I think your initial premise is ridiculous, but hey, if you're going to do that, you're not making anything worse. Cool. Go ahead and do that. The problem I got is that none of the people that we come across that seem to be so opposed to this vaccine are ever living like that. They the ones talking about they gonna be out here. Cole Beasley, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die living. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's always those people. So if Kyrie is afraid that this whole thing is a plot and that the vaccine is a plot, then don't take the vaccine. But live your life with somebody with good sense if that's what you're going to do. But he's showing up to a Native American reservation, the people who have caught perhaps the biggest L of all the L's that Americans have continued to catch in this country, at the very least post-1865, right? I don't want to get into an oppression Olympics, right? Don't start measuring. You get the point that I'm making. We've done them wrong. We've been doing them wrong. We keep doing them wrong. And Kyrie gonna show up there with no mask. And then apparently, because somebody figured out that he was breaking, I think he may have actually breaking a law in doing this, that they had gone and Photoshopped pictures after the fact from when he was there and put masks on people in the Photoshop because they wasn't supposed to do that. That's where we got a problem. You see what I mean? Like, that's where my issue with Kyrie comes up. You can think whatever you want. You can tweet whatever you want. You want to do that. Okay, cool. You went there and made things less safe for people that you claim to love, right? So yeah, your auntie out here talking crazy in Rolling Stone. Okay, whatever. You out here talking crazy in these places. Okay, whatever, right? Like, I mean, at least in this moment. This thing here, though, is something that can't be polarizing. Unless you believe that COVID-19 does not exist, then you have to acknowledge that he's all the way in the wrong there. You have to. And that's before we get to the fact this dude might not play 41 home games. His auntie say they're going to try to find a way around it, though. Peep that. We're going to find a workaround. All of that's to say, you hear how wild all that sounds? Like, what an outlier person we seem to be talking about here. Don't associate that with the entire league. That dude is kind of one of one. Like, yo, Jonathan Isaac, he might be one of one, right? One of one plus one of one makes two. Maybe. But that ain't everybody. And it ain't fair to act like it is. Sorry about that, guys. I know that took a little while to kind of get through all of it. There's a lot of things going on there. Gabe, I was watching your 49ers last night. I don't know if they're any good. Like, we don't know if the Packers are good either. Like, the Packers played a game against the Lions that was a little bit too competitive. And then they let these 49ers come back. And Jimmy Garoppolo does not look like he is actually good. I mean, I've been saying that for a while, but I'm just saying, if you watch that game, I don't know you can come away from that with like a legitimately positive opinion of him. And the 49ers got all these players that's dropping like flies. It's going to be interesting in the NFL this year because it doesn't look like anybody's that good. Like, no, like the Rams maybe look like the closest thing to a team that we're like, oh, man. Because Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl last year, and everyone's like, they brought back all 22 starters. Like, this is college or something. You know what I mean? Like, in college, it is almost necessarily a better thing that everybody comes back. It's possible some of the Bucks should have left. You never know. You know what I mean? Like, it don't mean the same thing. But, like, the Chiefs are 1-2 now. The Ravens had to mount a comeback to beat the Lions. Like, we're looking all around the league, and now, like, even the teams that are undefeated, the Panthers, do we really think they good? Like, we got a lot of that. And the rookie quarterbacks, none of them look very good, or at the very least any fun. They put Justin Fields out there. Gabe, I don't remember if we talked about it on here, but I talked about it on TV. The thing I kept saying about Justin Fields was that coach is up there coaching for his job. If Justin Fields could save his job, he would have had Justin Fields on the field, one would think. Oh, he's so stupid. Why isn't he playing Justin Fields? If you don't know, now you know. Maybe he ain't ready. Maybe the offense ain't ready for him. I don't know what the sum total of all those things is. But he was out there looking real cheeky. Real, real cheeky. Not the Heat. However, I feel like everybody I named, even Justin Fields, everything I talked about, I feel like all of them look better than Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger looks D-U-N done. And you know what's the thing about Ben Roethlisberger looking D-U-N done? You know what Ben Roethlisberger looked like last season? That's right. D-U-N done. He looked done last year. He's old. And he suffered a season-ending injury. And they don't even really like him that much. And not only did they bring him back this year, they brought him back with no apparent plan for what to do next. That's what I don't get about what the Steelers did. Like, the Steelers are largely win. Like, they got a the defense. That's a win now defense. They got a quarterback you can't win with. And then he got banged up in the game. And he old. Ain't no telling what happened, right? Like, it might have just been a little windy. I mean, I have no idea what it was. But he is finished. 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 Even the Giants drafted somebody over Eli Manning. And they love that guy. Ben Roethlisberger just out there looking like a bum. And Gabe, what I don't know they're supposed to do, and where I find it to be a little confusing, is last year's draft, while I just said that none of the rookies looked to be especially impressive, there's talent there. Like, basically, I'm thinking about it. I think all the rookies who came in this year, I understood why on all of them. Like, all of them, I was like, okay, I see why that guy's a first-round pick. I see why that guy's a first-round pick. So, like, for example, Josh Allen, I was always very critical of him, but I always understood why somebody gave it a run, right? Like, it was obvious what the talent was. And that's the thing with these guys. I could see why somebody would go for it with all of these dudes. Next year's draft, I don't think it's going to look like that. And, like, from what we've seen in college football this year, there hadn't really been a quarterback to talk about. Like, people are talking about Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma being the guy that's the best quarterback coming out. I mean, have you seen what's going on over there? The students were calling for the backup in this last game. That's what I'm saying. Like, the Steelers football teams are typically just not emotional about this stuff. If I'm not mistaken, they drafted a quarterback on Terry Bradshaw when it got late in the game for him. Or at the very least, you get a second round pick, like a flyer on some dude like you thought you were doing with Mason Rudolph, but that obviously ain't it. They went out there and took a flyer on Dwayne Haskins. Now, look, you know, I agree. Progress when we have an African-American retread, right? That wasn't always the case. You know, back when I was a kid, that never happened. This ain't the one to go get, though. Like, this ain't it. This ain't it. And so they're going to be out there with old Cook Ben Roethlisberger. And you know who the biggest loser that's going to be? Old Cook Ben Roethlisberger. Because if they leave him on the field, baby, look, man, this is not a dude that has a hive. This is not a dude that has a sizable fan base. This is a dude, however, where there are lots of people who have been waiting, 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 waiting for the chance to pile on to him. And guess what? No one will stop it because he doesn't even have a hive. Does not.
Why do you think that the Steelers haven't come up with a succession plan? What makes Roethlisberger different? Is it more about the Steelers or is it more about Roethlisberger?
That's a good question. One thing to note about the Steelers, and they deviated from this recently, but I am going to pull this up on the website as we talk about it, just to make sure that I do this right. But when they traded for Minka Fitzpatrick, they gave up a first round pick in order to do that. Before that, the Steelers had not traded their first round pick since 1967. From 1968 through 2019, because 2020 was the pick they gave up for Fitzpatrick. For all those years, the Pittsburgh Steelers had one first round pick, never two. Never zero, just one. And if I'm not mistaken, they didn't like trade up or down when they did that either. That may have happened like once or twice, but basically they just went out there and used whatever first round pick they had. And so they were so bad in the secondary, they made that trade for Fitzpatrick and they gave up a first round pick to get him. But maybe part of it is just an organizational strategy and decision that they don't move up or down in the first round of a draft, right? Maybe that's it. I don't know. But I could not believe that an NFL team looked at what Ben Roethlisberger looked like the last time we saw him play and thought, well, let's give him one more chance. I just could not believe that that would be the thing that they would do. I'll put it to you like this. He looks more cooked than Cam Newton looked last year. Or I would even say he looks more cooked than Cam Newton looked in 2019. When he absolutely looked cooked. Ben Roethlisberger don't look no better than that. But he's still out there, huh? He's still going to try that, huh? Yeah. Good luck to you with that one. If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story, I'm going to say it comes from health.
My name is Gabriel Geiger, and I'm a freelance contributor for Vice. This week, I wrote an article titled, Young Scandinavians Are Sticking Nicotine Pouches Up Their Asses. As the title suggests, it's about recent reports in Scandinavia that young people are sticking, tucking, and placing nicotine pouches in all sorts of odd places, including the anus and the foreskin of the penis. A bit of background, snus, a wet tobacco pouch that originates from Sweden, is quite popular in Scandinavia, now at least in Denmark. It's kind of used as a catch-all word for any tobacco or nicotine pouch, usually placed underneath the upper lip. Reports of this in Denmark were first published by the Danish national broadcaster, along with some probably valid concerns from health experts. One health consultant recounted the story of how someone had stuck snus inside the foreskin of their penis, and then they forgot about it, and he woke up, and it was apparently very swollen. It sounded quite painful. Independently, I found tons of threads on Scandinavian forums also talking about this, and I spoke to somebody in Norway who had done this, and they told me how they put snus inside the foreskin of their penis. Remember that Europeans aren't circumcised. And he said he didn't feel too much, but should have tried with some stronger snus. People on forums that I read seemed to have a little more luck than the person I talked to. So to give you an example, one person wrote, tried to put snus in my anus once, quite painful after just a few minutes, but the nicotine craving disappeared, so I guess it worked. So there you have it. I believe that snus can also be purchased in the US, so perhaps we'll see a migration of this trend across the Atlantic, but time will tell.
You do not want to give this a try. It has to seem like a horrific, no, that is not. No. There's a story that comes out every couple of years. Not even a story. I hear about something that people are willing to do. Like, it was something somebody was telling me a few years ago about how teenagers were, you know, because they didn't want to get caught drinking and like having it on their breath and stuff. And so they would take like a tampon and soak it in alcohol and then... Yo, man, it ain't never that serious, dog. I understand. You use your nicotine thing. You want to quit smoking. I get where you're coming from. I think I'd rather die. Like, I just can't. No. Gabe, you're a Scandinavian in law. Can you call the old country and tell them to stop tripping?
Yeah, I mean, I do know that snus is really, really big in Scandinavia because for a lot of places they're outlawing smoking, right? But these people still have nicotine cravings and it's not taboo quite yet. Snus isn't in the same way that smoking is or has become. This is something that I had no idea was going on, but certainly I can make some calls.
Yeah, I just can't imagine that moment when you're like, yeah, I'll give it a try. Nah.
All right, this next story comes from music.
This is Jem Aswad at Variety. 25 years ago, the Fugees, that's Lauryn Hill, Wyclef Jean, and Pross, were on top of the world with their hit album, The Score. Led by a cover of Roberta Flack's hit, Killing Me Softly with his song, the group introduced a kind of melodicism and singing as well as rapping that hadn't really been seen in the pop world. And combined with West Indian musical influences, all three members have a West Indian background, it made for a melting pot of sounds that has sold something like 7 million albums worldwide. Shortly after the album's success, the group split up. I can't remember if they said they were splitting up or if they just focused on solo projects amid a lot of bad feeling. Lauryn Hill went on to have one of the most successful debut albums in history with The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Wyclef Jean had a hit album, and even Pross had a hit album with his song Ghetto Superstar. But they all kind of faded out shortly afterwards. Lauryn just stopped touring altogether and stopped making records. She's only put out an unplugged album since then, although she has toured pretty regularly. On those tours, she became notorious for going on late, like at least an hour and a half late. So when the group announced that they were reuniting for a 25th anniversary tour around The Score and would be kicking it off with a special secret show in New York last week, I saw that coming a mile away, and we sent a freelance writer to cover it, which is good because they went on not 90 minutes, but 3.5 hours late. They made the crowd wait for 3.5 hours for a 7-song set that it did include their hits. It was a fully fleshed out show with like a 15-piece band or whatever, although it was a little rough in spots. Lauryn Hill acknowledged at one point, we're still working it out. But the Fugees are back. The tour goes across the United States in November, then heads to Europe for dates in London and Paris, and then it concludes in Africa with dates that are still to be announced. So the Fugees are back. Go and see them if you dare and be ready for a long wait before they hit the stage.
So interestingly, their first pop-up show was at The Job. It was at Pier 17, South Street Seaport, right? And so I was thinking to myself, if I had been in the office, you know, all of that stuff, I probably would have caught wind of what was going on. And I probably could have got the plug ongoing. It's outdoors, you know. I probably could have made it work so that I could wait 3 hours for them to hit the stage. Which, I mean, look, you go to a Fugees show and it's 3 hours late, don't complain. Like, I don't know how you don't budget that in on the front end. Like, there's no mystery to this. This is probably going to be what's going to happen. Now, number one, I see no way this tour makes it to completion. They tried this before. Like, they got issues, they got beef. I'm actually quite surprised. I was surprised that there would be that much interest in a Fugees tour that they could actually book arenas. I couldn't see that coming. But this is my question. And I'm asking people who were of the time. And Gabe, this is a little bit before your time, so don't feel bad. But for people who were of the time, I really mean this. Do you really miss the Fugees? No, and I ask that because, look, The Score came out in 96. Go back and listen to The Score. It's interesting. It does not sound like an album that the world would love. Like, I've always felt like the world loved Lauryn Hill. I mean, two of the dudes can't really rap. One of them could kind of rap. One of them can't rap at all. Like, their last verse was always whack because they had to hide the dude who couldn't rap till all the way at the end. I'm a refugee from Guantanamo Bay. Dance around your border like I'm Cassius Clay. Like, he was like the worst mix of Lord Have Mercy and RBX and something way whacker than the two of them combined. Like, I just never had a point where I'd be like, damn, I need another Fugees album. No, Lauryn Hill came out with an album that I don't love as much as the rest of the world, but it satisfied my Fugees craving. Wyclef came out with The Carnival, which is better than The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and that was great. I didn't need the Fugees. All the Fugees does is give us more prize. Nobody wants that. Nobody needs that, but I'm just never, it's always like, yo, are the Fugees gonna get back together? I just don't, who are the people who actually feel that way? I've never been around and people were clamoring to hear from the Fugees. I never showed up at somebody's crib and they were bumping The Score again. I mean, the album before they put out, The Score was whack, by the way. Don't forget. Like, it's wild how they get this kind of, like, legendary treatment. And maybe that is the greatest argument of, like, just how dope is Lauryn Hill, right? You know, she got all her issues. She got this. She got that. But she could have been the greatest rapper of all time. If she had, like, stuck to that and decided that was the thing that she wanted to do, she could have been the greatest rapper of all time. In fact, let's talk about this. Lauryn Hill ain't been playing no arenas. How in the world is it that you're going to tell me the Fugees could sell out an arena, but Lauryn Hill will play like your outdoor venue or your concert hall? I don't know the people who love the Fugees that much. This just doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't Foxworth's wife love the Fugees or love Lauryn Hill?
She loves Lauryn Hill, and that's what made her give me the bird, because I said something unkind about that weird Lauryn Hill unplugged album. That's how hard she rolled.
Got it. So might need to update this on Friday when we get Foxworth back on.
We just might see if they're going to go see the Fugees.
All right. This last story comes from Crime.
Hi, I'm Camila Kudelska with Wyoming Public Radio. The past 2 weeks, the disappearance and death of Gabrielle Petito, a 22-year-old white woman, has been headline news across the country. Her body was found in Wyoming last week, a state which has an epidemic of missing and murdered Native American women. So it's been frustrating to people who say the media ignores missing Indigenous women cases. Since the year 2000, Indigenous people have made up about 21% of homicides, even though only 3% of Wyoming's population is Indigenous. And that is according to a state report that was released in January. Included in that report, only 30% of Indigenous homicide victims had any media coverage, and the number is closer to 51% for white homicide victims. Missing and murdered Indigenous women advocates say the media portrayal of missing Indigenous women is more likely violent and graphic in language. So they say media should treat an African American, Hispanic, or Indigenous missing woman the same as a white missing woman. But some advocates are hopeful that the missing case of Gabrielle Petito will help more people recognize differences in the urgency and attention cases of missing Indigenous women get, and that maybe that will help improve responses to them in the future.
All right, so I think we wound up getting around to, like, I don't want to say what the point is, but kind of, I think it's fair to say what the issue is. And it's not really about the fact that we don't report when Indigenous women turn up missing, or that we don't report when Black women turn up missing, or Latino women or Asian women. Is that you only care when it's white women. Like, it's really that fundamental, because I saw when the story about this woman in Wyoming popped up, I saw a lot of Black people making the point, and this is not like it's a point that hasn't been made before, but, you know, a lot of Black people made the point that when Black women go missing, nobody really says anything like they do when it is a white woman. Now, I also do think there are a lot more women that go missing than we have stories that go national about it. I feel like we don't need to lose sight of the fact that there's probably also a bunch of white women who go missing and don't nobody really talk about it, and don't nobody really report about it. Like, we have a much larger issue, generally speaking, with how we treat women. Like, we get there and then you trickle down, and yes, a story about a white woman is more likely to be discussed, but I don't know how likely a story about a white woman is to be discussed relative to the number of white women who go missing. I do know that you'll talk about it if it's a white woman way more than if you'll talk about it if it's any other woman. The same thing goes for missing children. That's a big one. Like, you talk to Black people who grew up in Atlanta about the Atlanta child murders and the time period and what went on there, and like their omnipresent terror and everything else. And it was a fairly big story at the time. Whole lot of y'all only hearing about this now because I'm telling you about it. You know, like, it was one of those, if those were white children who were dying in the ways that they were in Atlanta, it would have been a much bigger thing than it actually was at the time. This is just kind of sort of how it works. It's saddening, right? It's sad and it's depressing that we get there. But I also think a big part that makes this so sad is, man, so many people turn up missing that we can't even talk about all of them. We can't even come close to talking about all of them because people kill women and disappear them. Like, actually, I was talking once about it, and I said something about, you know, women and how less likely it is for women to do these things. They're like, there's a whole show about it called Snapped. And I'm like, yeah, there is. Let me tell you something. If they did a Snapped about dudes, they could do a 24-hour Snapped marathon, and they wouldn't have to, like, do a rerun ever. 24, like, they have a Snap channel. All it is a bunch of Snapped episodes about dudes killing women and disappearing them. And they would never have to run an episode twice.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Voicemail time. This week, the game was cheating. Oldie but goodie. What brought it up to you?
Totally will. But then the Lions lost on a 66-yard field goal that hit the crossbar and still went through. That definitely had to feel like the game was cheating. But if I was a Lions fan and that felt like the game was cheating, you should have took that game back to the store like 75 years ago. Clearly, it has a defect.
We got a lot of good ones, you know, as usual. But not every one of them had name and location attached to it, of course. This first one didn't. It's a good one, though.
Man, Bomani, I got the ultimate the game is cheating story. Can't nobody tell me different. All right, so this is 2K11. So for most people who remember, or if you don't, 2K11 is supposed to be the special 2K because MJ was on the cover and MJ was in the game. So me and my homies, we go to the crib, we got the game, and we're going through all those MJ challenges, right? So it's my turn on the sticks. I'm playing in the 96 finals when it's Jordan versus the Sonics. I'm the Sonics because I feel like I'm nice. So I'm going to be MJ, right? Cool. Game is going back and forth. We get to the fourth quarter. I go up three with like 3 or 4 seconds left, not that much time left. So my boy, he calls a timeout, gets the ball at half court. So now me, I'm on my Greg Popovich. I'm like, all right, I'm going to intentionally foul. So he got to shoot 2 free throws. It'll be like a second left. I'm going to win. Easy. Right? No. This is when the game starts cheating. So my boy inbounds the balls to MJ, right? MJ catches it. I got Gary Payton. So I intentionally foul him. You know how you can hit the select button or whatever, and then they automatically foul him, right? So I hit the select button. GP goes, wraps up MJ, right? Nothing happens. MJ gets himself free from the foul, takes one dribble, and shoots a three and makes it. Not only does he shoot the three and make it, the ref calls a foul. Bo, there was no foul. He broke out of the intentional foul. How does this happen? So my boy hits the free throw, wins the game, and I'm sick. So I pick up my stuff, walk out the crib. I ain't talked to my boy for like 3-4 days because the game was cheating. Appreciate you, bro.
The best part is he didn't say I was sick. He says I am sick because he is clearly sick to this day. MJ broke out of a bear hug and got a continuation three. Oh, that made my day. Who else we got?
This next one, again, no name and location. It's about Super Mario Strikers. Here it is.
Hey, Bo, what's up, man? I've been waiting on this topic since the last time you did it. So 2007, me and a couple of my college roommates had an apartment on the fourth floor. That part will become relevant in a second. But one of my roommates used to own a GameCube, and he also owned this game called Super Mario Strikers, the soccer game. And he thought, as the owner of the GameCube, that naturally he would be the best at this game, which he was not. So one day, sitting around, and one of my other roommates just beating the brakes off. Just goal after goal, looking like a turnstile. 5-1, 6-1, 7-1. And GameCube owner is just furious, just steaming mad. A couple seconds later, another goal, 10-1. This man gets up, doesn't say a word, press the eject button on the GameCube. Super Mario Strikers popped out. He opens the door of the balcony and flings it off the fourth floor balcony and said, "We will never play this game again." And goes to his room, he closes the door, and sure enough, that was the last time we all played Super Mario Strikers. All right, man, thanks for the time. Have a good one.
Wow, what an executive decision to make. Why couldn't you just never play it again?
Well, he owned the GameCube.
Yeah, but I mean, you just don't have to play anymore. All you gained by throwing it out is depriving your friends of the opportunity to play when you weren't there.
Because this takes it back to the time, like you've talked about, where maybe one person had the game or like one person had the console.
Yes.
Not everybody.
I feel like the dude, he took what I call the heavy metal approach. And so my thing about heavy metal music is I feel like it's music from people who decided if I can't dance, won't nobody dance. It's a really selfish outlook. You know what I mean? And that's what that dude did right there.
All right, this last one comes from Travis in New Orleans.
At the time, I had taken this Pac-12 powerhouse, Oregon. We in year about 6 or 7, and I got them boys rolling. I'm talking about 3 undefeated seasons. This is an online dynasty, so I'm playing with a couple of my friends on Xbox 360. And I scheduled an out-of-conference game against Texas. Texas, I'm like, hey, look, Texas Tech ain't nobody. They ranked. They wasn't even ranked at the time. I want to say it was like 3-8 the season before. I just needed a game where I could get in Texas to follow one of them promises for my kids playing NCAA, you know, to keep them happy or whatnot. So we down there in Texas Tech, and it's this guy destroying my All-American right tackle. Every down, he is swimming him. He is throwing. He is bull rushing. It just doesn't make any sense. It got so bad, Bo, that this is the year in NCAA where you could go in and make adjustments. So I got to the point where I can't even throw the ball. I'm like, look, just hold him. Like, forget the rest. No more normal blocking, aggressive blocking. Hold him, please. Like, we got to do something. He is still destroying my whole team. I go look at my right tackle. He is a 99 with all of the upgrades. I look at the defensive end who's destroying him. Bo, he was a 70. He was a 70. And I got so damn mad, I broke my controller and the TV. And my girl at the time walks in and is like, what the hell just happened? And I just was like, look, you just gonna let me slide on this.
So, I love the detail with which you could discuss everything that was going on. Because that was the thing, man. I used to sit there when I would play NCAA with Dynasty. Like, I'm ashamed looking back. I would give an actual recruiting pitch. Like, I'm talking to the screen and I'm giving my pitch. And I would always close it the same way. I would say the same thing to all the kids. There's a place for you at the University of Texas. Like, I wouldn't tell them there was a place for you in the starting lineup because we loaded, man. Like, I can't promise you that. Like, it's a competition over here. You know what I'm saying? But I would be there. Like, we talk about playing the game just to keep the recruit happy and all that stuff. I felt that because I'd be in there just like, no, don't worry, man. You can wear that number. We'll get you a game at home. Don't worry about that. Like, I would be so engulfed in the whole process. I would really do that. He said his man was getting tossed around by a 70. A 70. He's like my All-America right tackle. He's right back there. You just gonna have to let me slide on this. Your pain is felt, brother. Your pain is felt. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this here 3 times a week. Gabe Bassane handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Gabriel Geiger of Vice News. Check out his story of Scandinavians sticking nicotine pouches up their asses. That's the headline. Yeah. Thanks to Jim Oswald of Variety. Check out his story on the Fugees reuniting for a tour for the first time in 15 years at Variety.com. And thank you to Camilla Kadelska of Wyoming Public Radio. Check out her story about the racism Native Americans see in the reporting of the Petito mystery. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.